All right, we're back for another episode of Hard Knocks. This week, just Hard Knocks. Recap, it is episode 5, the Hard Knocks finale for this year. I'm Blakey Locke. I'm here with the Jetstream guys, Connor and Jesse. What's going on, fellas?
Getting to that time, Blake. It's getting to that. It's getting close. Away. I was walking home from the train today, and for the very first time, I started getting nervous. It's been mostly excitement the entire offseason. But now that we're a week away, I'm, legitimately getting nervous. Like, I don't know. I'm starting to listen to different podcasts previewing like the whole NFL league season, like national guys talking about the league and making their predictions. And like, I don't know, like we're Jets fans. We are expecting Aaron Rodgers to like bring us to the promised land. You know, and not everybody's on that boat. And I'm just like, damn, like, oh, wow. Like, I saw, like, Bill Simmons didn't have us in the playoffs. He also didn't have the Bills in the playoffs. Like,
of course he doesn't.
No, but he also doesn't have the, yeah, and he has the Patriots being the 7th seed, of course.
He's a fucking homer.
You know, but like Schrager had, like, I was just listening to the Simmons pod with Schrager, and Schrager had us as a 4 seed winning the AFC East. You know, so like, everybody's all over the place, but everybody thinks the Jets are going to be better this year. It's just like, oh my God, like, now we're approaching week 1, and like, it's Jets Bills Monday night, and it's real deal. Like, the final episode of Hard Knocks just aired. Like they just showed all the guys. Like, no one was practicing really, except like in this episode. It was just mainly like, all right, like, we got another week before like the practice for the Bills game starts.
Right.
You know, like, what have they been doing the last week?
There's like 5-6 minutes of like actual like practice taking place, and then it was like, yeah, so let's check in with Aaron Rodgers on an alien story.
Right.
let's take a trip with the guys to go see a Broadway show.
So like, it was like more of like that. And I just, because of that, kind of like put me in the mood, like, oh shit. Like, I saw like the Bills logos on like the tackling dummies, which we saw on social media as well. But still, like, I was just like, wow, like, you know, it's finally here. We finally got to see Rodgers play in a Jets uniform. You know, that's one thing checked off the list. You know, he showed up to OTAs. He did all these things. Week one's less than a week away. Like, it's 4 or 5 days away now. That's just, you know, it's pretty crazy to me, and I'm really excited.
Yeah.
I'm nervous, but mainly nervous.
Yeah, I'm completely with you on being nervous. It's one thing going into week one, knowing that the team is like, at best, mediocre. Like, they were kind of like mediocre to average, like how we were going into the season last year. We were like, okay, so like things are starting to turn around. Jesse, you and I kept saying, as long as the Jets were on the in the hunt graphic by the end of the season, then we could consider that a successful season. And they were, you know, obviously plans changed last season where, you know, the expectations changed, and a 7-10 record wasn't as satisfying as we predicted or we had hoped for in the beginning. But now, yeah, like you said, expectations amongst the fan base, amongst the rest of the NFL, they're a lot higher. And that has me very nervous. Like, if the Jets go out there Monday night and shit a brick at home in retro uniforms on the anniversary of 9/11 in Aaron Rodgers' first game as a Jet, man, that's a demoralizing loss, even though I'm just saying it kicks you right in the gut to get the season going. I'll say that.
What's the, if the Daily News and New York Post were not in New York, what would be the back page headline in, say, Boston, if the Jets go out and get smoked on 9/11 at home on Monday night?
Oh boy.
I don't know.
That'd be bad. Let's just say it'd be bad.
Wouldn't be good.
But yeah. I mean, like, yeah, it wouldn't be good. Yeah.
And it's probably not gonna be good if it happens and it's New York tabloids still too. Like, it's gonna be bad.
It's gonna be bad. Samini's licking his chops, kinda hoping for something like that to happen. But whoever comes up with their back page headlines for the Post, you know that they've already got something cooked.
Yeah, like, for sure.
Cooked something for, you know, if it's a bad game, they've got something prepped. And that goes for the Giants too, you know, because the Giants are playing at home on Sunday night. They're in prime time also against one of their division rivals. Granted, their expectations are a little lower than the Jets, but still, you know, it's.
I'd argue that like playing on Sunday night's even more difficult than Monday night, because Sunday night you get the full Monday every sports show talking about your loss or your win. Right. And then Monday night, like, you get like that night, but then everybody's already on to the next week, basically, like after Monday night football. So like the news cycle is a little different for Monday night football. So like the Giants are definitely at the back page Monday morning, win or lose, obviously. And then there'll be like Jets preview. And then who cares about the Tuesday back page headline? Like, it's the Monday morning quarterback, right? Like, it's so.
Yeah. Anyway. Sunday night football, I think, is still Sunday night football is considered game of the week. Like Monday night and Thursday night are rotating based on schedules, and they Monday night's definitely better than Thursday. But yeah, you're right. Once the Monday night game's over, people are kind of on to the next week.
I think Monday night having Buck and Aikman now, I think makes it better.
Yeah,
because like a couple years ago when it was Tirico and Gruden, I really liked them. I think they were a good pairing. And then when it was Tirico and
you didn't like Kornheiser.
You didn't like Jason Witten?
Yeah. Oh, God. I forgot about Jason Witten.
Yeah, the Jason Witten experiment.
It was atrocious.
They had Kornheiser and Tirico and somebody else at one. Jaworski at one point?
Maybe. Yeah, they were cycling so many people out with.
And Booger.
Yeah, Booger was there for a while.
The Booger Mobile.
I know Kornheiser stopped doing it because he doesn't like the fly. That's why he hasn't been back to Bristol since the pandemic.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know that. But, I mean,
they haven't been in studio at PTI in, like, years, I feel like. But anyway.
Yeah. And, I mean, now that Buck and Aikman are there, I think it makes it a little better because they used to be, like – I mean, obviously, they were Fox's guys. You know, they were what everyone turned to. It was like if you were playing in the Buck and Aikman game or the Nance and Romo game, then, you know.
Yeah.
Your team was in good shape. You know,
I mean, Jim Nance and Joe Buck were announcing Super Bowls for Fox and CBS respectively.
Right.
So like those are if you're playing in a game with over our lifetime, the announcer is either Al Michaels, Joe Buck or Jim Nance, you're in a big game.
Right.
You know, those have been the three guys forever. And ESPN's never really like Tirico's good, but like, you know, he's never been like one of the big three. So.
Right. I remember growing up as Summerall and John Madden. But
you're an old man. So
sometimes I really do age myself.
Yeah, I had John Madden with Al Michaels. I don't remember any Pat or Summerall at all.
Like, well, I went to my first game in 1995. So
that's the year I was born. So
you want to know who's okay? I definitely told you. Do you want to know who was playing quarterback in the very first Jet game I saw when they were playing the Indianapolis Colts?
Was it Boomer?
Jim Harbaugh.
Jim Harbaugh.
Wow.
That's a good one.
Nope. Yeah. Very first Jet game I've ever been to. And it was.
Wait, he was playing quarterback for the Colts, you said, or the Jets?
Yeah, for the Colts.
Who was the Jets quarterback? Was it Boomer?
Maybe Boomer. Probably Boomer. I mean,
the Colts quarterback, but you don't remember the Jets quarterback. Yeah, I don't remember.
It probably was Boomer, but it was like those like 3-4 years with Kotite where it was. My dad was just a miserable person to be around for like 4 to 5 months out of the year. Because they were just like the worst team in the league, but
did the Colts win that game?
I don't remember, actually.
Bubby Brister? There's no way there was a quarterback on the Jets named Bubby.
Bubby?
I've never heard of this person.
I've never heard of that person. Let me see. Jets, Colts.
Wait, they played twice.
Well, yeah, because they were
in the same division.
They were in the AFC East, the Colts.
And then the other Jets quarterback. Wait, this guy.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right.
Craig Erickson played for Indy in the first game. And then in the second game in October, it was Bubby Brister for the Jets. Boomer got hurt, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at this now. Yeah, I guess the Jets lost. They went to overtime.
Jim Harbaugh and Craig Erickson both played.
Wow.
Jim was 9 of 14 for 87.
Real barn burner in that game. Sure, a lot of people stuck around.
Oh my god, that's so good. All right, have we talked about Hard Knocks once yet?
Not yet.
No.
Well,
like we kind of mentioned this episode, I think there's definitely less to talk about because there's not as much like storylines as it was just like the guys having a good time. So it's fine if we're wasting some time, but we can get into it and see where things go. So the preseason's over. So it started with cut day, which we knew going into it, we weren't going to see There weren't going to be cameras in the room for cuts. And so that's one thing I was thinking, because it started with Jason Brownlee going into the room with Saleh and Joe Douglas, and the cameras are in there, and it's supposed to be like suspenseful. Does Jason Brownlee know he's making the team because the cameras are in there? Because they said they weren't going to film? Or is he just like, it's such a big moment that he's not even like thinking like, oh, the cameras are here. So that means I'm not getting cut.
That's a good question. I mean, they all are told by the quote unquote Turk, every team has one, right? That like, come get your play, like bring your playbook. Coach wants to see you.
Right.
And then, I mean, that's a great question. Like, I think that I had the same thought. Like, he has to know there's a camera there. Like, he has to know that he made the team. I think that they had a camera in there for every single one. I don't know. If I'm Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh, I mean, I'll just have a camera in there. It doesn't even have to be on. Like, no one knows if the camera's on when you're standing in front of it, right? So, right. You know, I just assume that they put one in there for every single cut. And they were like, this is one Jets drive. This isn't Hard Knocks, maybe. Or they didn't even say anything. And they just had a camera in there. And I don't know, if I'm them, like, I want the suspense to be built. Like, I want to be the one giving the good news, not having the camera give it away.
Right.
So yeah. Well, that's what I was thinking. Cause Joe Douglas does try to build the suspense. He's like, man, you know, you were really behind the eight ball coming out of Southern Miss undrafted. And he did the same thing later on. And he's trying to build the suspense. And he's like, yeah, everything's going against you, but like, you've really done a great job. You've worked really hard. And it basically is like a setup to like, but there's not a spot for you. But then he says, you're a Jet. Congratulations. And so I don't know. That's just a random thought I had, because going into it, we knew that they weren't going to have cuts. I mean, but I feel like that's such a big moment. Like, if you're Jason Brownlee, you're not walking in there being like, oh, there's a camera. Like, I think it's going to – I think I made the team. Like, you're just so, like, locked in on what's going on.
Yeah,
like,
and Xavier
– I doubt that you're thinking about that.
Xavier Gibson was like – it seemed pretty genuine that he was like shocked, I guess. That's not the right word. He was just like surprised, like, oh my God, thank God. Like, he scared me like, when he made the team. So right. like there has to be, that didn't look fake.
No, so, I don't think it was.
I don't think so.
I think, yeah.
And I mean, it's like, was real. I was thinking back to one of like the jobs that I've had over the course of my professional career, when I got the call about getting a job offer, the woman who was on the other line, she basically gave me and kind of did the intro, kind of like how Joe Douglas did that. He's like, no, we really appreciate you going through this whole process. You know, we thought you were great. We think you'd be a great addition to the team. And it's like, not just like saying exactly what's going to happen and really drawing it out. She wasn't doing it intentionally, but I think.
Or she was, and she just wanted to fuck with you.
Maybe she just wanted to fuck with me, but. Joe Douglas.
I mean, Joe Douglas was doing it intentionally.
Clearly, yeah, he was clearly doing it because probably HBO was like, let's build a little suspense too. And Joe Douglas definitely was excited to do it.
Yeah, he's probably just having I doubt HBO even said anything. I bet he just like, this is a fun moment. Like, this is like, you're making somebody's lifelong dream come true.
Right. Especially so, like, if these guys like, are undrafted and
right.
One of whom those spots really only opened up because of Corey Davis.
Right.
Yeah. Corey Davis doesn't leave and one of those guys ain't on the team.
It's Brownlee because
Brownlee.
Special team stuff.
Yeah. So,
But yeah, it was. I think there is like a bit of a thrill. Like, even if you're like a good person, like having that big of news that you get to tell somebody, like it's the same thing. If you have like a big story that you like see your buddies and you like, oh, you guys like get ready for this one, and you kind of like build it up before you let them hear like the important part, because you just want like that power of being like, I know something that you guys don't know, and like I'm gonna make sure that I can drag it out. Yeah, everybody loves that feeling.
Like when the Raiders traded for Davante Adams last year, I have a buddy who's a huge Raiders fan, and I'm like, he didn't post in our group chat yet. I called him. I was like, dude, where are you? Like, what's going on? You haven't heard the news? He's like, no, what? And I told him, and he started losing his mind. It's just a great feeling. It's the best.
Yeah. So yeah, we got that with both of those guys, the young receivers, which was very cool to see. We kind of gotten it. We talked about it last week about how they had this relationship that we didn't know about, like that started before they were even both signed to the Jets. So it was very cool to see and how they we're kind of talking about how they're just going to keep pushing each other more. And now this is just kind of the beginning for them. And now they have like real things to achieve being on the actual roster. And then we didn't see Tanzel Smart get cut, but he did get interviewed after he was cut. I guess because he was such a big character, maybe they asked if they could interview him and he agreed to do it, I'm sure. And so they interviewed him, and this was before he knew he was going to be on the practice squad when they interviewed him. And he was obviously upset, which was really hard to see. It was better for us knowing already that he was going to be on the practice squad. Otherwise, it probably would have been like more emotional, more like brutal for us to watch. But he seemed to take it really well. He was like, this is what God's plan for me is, whatever, like that whole kind of thing that you get from athletes a lot, but seemed to be taking it pretty well. And then obviously we find out he makes the practice squad, he comes back and we see him on the practice squad. So I'm just so glad he's there, because we do see him again. He goes out with the team to the Broadway show that we see later. Like, him just being a part of the group is like so special.
Yeah. And I before I get into Tanzel Smart, hearing Rogers talk about Brownlee and Gibson was awesome too. Like, just being like, he's like, I could tell those, you know, saw those guys the entire process, you know, could tell that they were putting in the work, they were doing everything that we needed them to do to get to this point, all that. And just saying, he's like, you know, he's like the proud, like, older brother type thing. Like, he was really happy for these guys and to see them make it. But Tanzel Smart, like you said, I think if he wasn't coming back to the practice squad, or we didn't know that yet, yeah, that would have been a tougher scene, especially because every single time that they have like some emotional thing with him, or really it's always the thing with Hard Knocks, it's like the players are like always holding their kid, or their kid is like 2 feet away from them or something, and it's like, you guys are really doing this, aren't you? But and thankfully he was just like, you know, they showed him suiting up again and going back out to the field, and he was just like, yeah, this was a once he cleared waivers, it was kind of like a no-brainer, I think, to come back here. You know, I know all the coaches, and kind of like what you were saying last week, Blake, where he was like, he was saying, during the game, you know, I deserve to be playing with you guys. I deserve to be here. I think I've done everything, you know, and he obviously has, because he's been on the Jets for years. Like, this isn't like he just signed with the team. So he's been around, he knows the coaches, and yeah, I'm glad he's back. If he has to come up at some point, we know that we got a guy who knows he can play at that level. And, you know, now you have even more reason to root for him, you know, beyond
he's on the Jets. I want this to be the anti-Herb Brooks, like the opposite of the Herb Brooks story, where he doesn't make the team in 60 and then they will go on to win the whole thing. Yes. Yeah, I want him to be like, all right, like, he made the team and they went go on to win the whole thing, and he gets to be part of it. Because, like, he's been here for this whole building up of this organization over the last couple of years that Joe Douglas and Saleh have done. He's been part of that. I mean, he's not a major part, but he's been here. He's been part of the rotation of the D-line, and, you know, been part of the practice. He is part of the practice squad now. And I think, yeah, he deserves to be there. He's earned that right to be part of this team. And he's also, like, really clearly, like, very close with everybody on the defensive line, at least. Like, it's very clear there. Like, I don't remember who he was sitting next to at the Broadway show, but, like, Solomon Thomas, like, him and Solomon Thomas are clearly boys. Like, they've both been on the Jets for a couple of years now, and their roles have been very similar. So I'm just, I'm just reiterating what you guys are saying. I'm really happy that he's, you know, around. You know, that's one of those stories that worked out.
Right.
Yeah. That being our only, like, kind of sad cut story, and the fact that he's back is, makes it okay. But then we saw a little bit of Dalvin Cook. It's obviously been weird, him getting signed like in the middle of Hard Knocks filming and then didn't play at all in the preseason and is kind of ramping himself up. So we haven't really seen much of him. We saw him like show up at practice like the day he was signed, and that's basically it. But we saw him a little bit like actually practicing and in drills, and they showed him at his house. And just the one thing I took away from it was he seems to have, I mean, he's not clearly anywhere as old as Aaron Rodgers, but especially for a running back, is considered a veteran at this point. he seemed to have a bit of like the same energy that I kind of saw from Rodgers, where he seems to be like very rejuvenated by like this new opportunity. Like it seems like in Minnesota, he had some injury issues, which is part of it, but like Alexander Mattison was kind of like coming up and taking a lot of his carries, and I felt like maybe if you're like the alpha, the guy for so long, one of the best backs in the league, and then you're kind of like fading away a bit, it's kind of like demoralizing. But then you're coming into this opportunity knowing like they have Breece Hall, they have Michael Carter. I'm going to be like the veteran who's going to try to like lead this group and just do what I can. It kind of gives, I feel like would give a guy like that a brand new kind of attitude and outlook on how he's going to like approach things. And he seems to be totally like bought in of like, I came here because I want to win. Like, this seems like a great place where I could legitimately win a championship.
Yeah, like showing him, he's like, I just got the house. We're still like, you know, feeling, we're still putting stuff together. He's like, I don't think I've slept in the bed once. His couch is, you know, unmatched. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yeah, no, this is good. You know, it's just good to see guys that are excited to be here. And, you know, having a coaching staff back that up always helps too. You can tell it. I mean, you guys saw that video. I don't even know what his name is. The guy who's coaching the Cardinals.
Yeah, Jonathan Gannon.
Yeah, his Gannon. Little pep talk. You know, and like I like kept like,
who
going
took the bus here?
All the players, and it's like they couldn't be less interested. So you go back to, and we'll get to Salah's speech later, because man, did that one have me. That one had me ready. But and Ulbrich for that matter. But yeah, no, it just goes back to having guys that are excited to be here. And you never thought in a million years a guy like Dalvin Cook, you know, who was, you know, top back last year and a couple years now, would want to come here. Even if it's just a one year contract, he very well might be gone next year. He does well, who knows, he comes back. But just the fact he went out of the way to, you know, he wanted to play here. He wanted to play here over Miami, a state where he's from. Like he's from
at least,
Florida.
Yeah. He wanted to play with Aaron Rodgers. He wanted
that too. I think
it begins and ends with I want to play with eight.
Yeah,
like, which like, I'm fine with.
Yeah, I don't want to play with Tua. I definitely don't want to play in Tampa Bay.
Right.
Like, you know, Jacksonville's got their running back, so I'm good. I'll go play with Aaron Rodgers.
I forget who mentioned it. You just mentioned it, but biggest takeaway for me of this whole episode is that I have serious couch envy of Dalvin Cook. I'm searching for a couch for my new apartment right now. And my goodness,
awesome.
That couch is the size of my living room. So that was my favorite thing. I was like, oh my God, I need that couch so badly. Also,
and the next thing, are you going
real quick? No, Connor, you mentioned Salah's speech. Just real quick, I'm not going to say anything about the speech itself. I need Giants fans to stop telling me that Salah is like this corny, like guy who like tries to curse too much to try and sound intense. Like the guy has a hold me back coach everywhere on the field. Like that's not like a, like the guy's not like pulling it back every now and then. It's every play.
Right.
This is like, this guy runs the stairs before every single football game. He's like, there's not a fake bone in this guy's body. He's
people
not
see
like
that
pretending
as like
to be intense.
Too. And it's like, no, that's
he's kind of a psycho, but it's like genuine. It's not like,
yeah, exactly. He's
like a hard nosed defensive coordinator. Like,
he's got,
guy. Like, that's
and he's
just,
got seven. This is a father of seven we're speaking about here. All right. So like, let's put some respect on Robert Saleh's name.
He's living
in
a hotel room with those kids his first year as head coach.
Yeah.
Like, which is just, dude,
bonkers.
you're an NFL head coach. Go get a condo, like, please.
Yeah, seriously, come on.
But the next thing we saw, which was a cool kind of Hard Knock story that is kind of something we've been like looking for the whole season, and I guess they were saving this one, and that was Izzy Abanaconda, who got hurt in preseason, is recovering from that injury, but we got to see his family, who I didn't know anything about his family. They immigrated here from Nigeria, I guess like right before he was born, because it seems like he said like his mom was pregnant with his older brother or something, like when they came here. So that was a cool story, seeing like everything with him. And it's just, I mean, we've talked about it with Tanzel Smart and like other people, like when you see these guys like with their family and everything, like it just totally changes your like perception of them, where it's like, oh yeah, like this is like a really like seems like such a nice kid from like such a nice family who's like, his dad was like, I taught him from a young age, like if he wants to play football, like he's got to be tough, like all this stuff. Yeah. Like just those stories are like so cool. And to see those guys that like clearly his family like sacrificed so much so that he could have like these opportunities that he's now taken full advantage of and is now hopefully going to be super successful in the NFL and then is going to be able to pay it back to his family in a million different ways. So that was a very cool Hard Knocks type story that we got.
Yeah, that was great. Just like I've mentioned this, I think every episode, but these are the types of stories I love the most.
Yep.
And it was just really good to see it. Somebody that pretty much every, like, there's a lot of guys who like get drafted and like even the fan base is just like, oh, like who's our fifth round pick again?
Right.
Or, like Izzy's clearly like made a little bit of a name for, he also has like a great name, Izzy Abanaconda.
Yeah.
Like, that's just like a name that like kind of like rolls off the tongue. so that definitely helps. But, you know, he's definitely, you know, whether it was his tape at Pitt and how well he played at Pitt or just in preseason. You know, he's earned some recognition, you know, so I'm happy that he got a little pub here.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
But going from the most heartwarming moment of the episode to the most ridiculous moment of the episode, the next thing that we got was the Aaron Rodgers alien story, which was probably the biggest takeaway, like on social media at least, that people were talking about of the episode. And last week we talked about how it had been like the Aaron Rodgers like football guy experience through the first couple episodes, where you really saw like how much he loves football and is crazy about football and all this different stuff. And then we said last week there was one moment with the AirPods and wired headphones conversation where he talked about like the electromagnetic like field if you're wearing wireless headphones like messing with you, and we were like, oh right, this guy is kind of nuts.
Kind of a whack.
And then and then he has his one of his college teammates came to practice, lives in Jersey, came to practice to watch, and this college teammate, Aaron, was at his house the night before the draft or the week of the draft when he was going to be in New York for the draft and was staying with his buddy in New Jersey, and they hear like an alarm. So they go outside onto the front porch of his buddy's house and they see a giant, basically flying, an unidentified flying object flying through the air. And then shortly after they see or hear like fighter jets going flying by and they're like, oh, that was a UFO. And fighter jets are chasing it down. And apparently the alarm that they heard was from like the nuclear power plant down the road that, according to Aaron Rodgers, who has since done all the alien research you can do, is a very popular place for UFO sightings. So we got our first real Aaron Rodgers conspiracy story.
Oh, I believe him 100%. You know, there's nothing in my mind that can change that. In fact, I bet this is why he fell so far in the draft. I think that he probably mentioned this in the week leading up to some of those teams being like, yo, you guys will never believe this. I saw a UFO. And they're like, we can't be drafting somebody who believes in aliens. But this was, you know, pre the congressional hearings that we just had that proved that they exist. So I think that this is all clearly, this is a huge conspiracy theory to make Aaron Rodgers drop to Green Bay. I think this is all, you know, Green Bay's doing. That's where I stand.
Well, this is, the story is pre Joe Rogan experience. People didn't know about aliens yet.
Yeah.
Right. People hadn't gotten high and listen to an episode of Joe Rogan talking about how
ayahuasca and
yeah. Well, this is pre COVID Joe Rogan experience when he actually talked about different things and didn't just have guests from all walks of life on and be like, so what about that vaccine, huh? It's like, dude, that was like 3 years ago.
My favorite thing with Joe Rogan is when people, I don't listen to it, but when people post on like Twitter about, I don't know, something crazy, and it's like someone's like saying something absolutely insane on Joe Rogan, and then Joe Rogan just being like, so did you see that video, the moose taking out that truck? And it's like, yo, James, pull up that video.
Well, that's what his show used to be, which I didn't listen to like every episode, but if it was like somebody that seemed interesting, like you did have the one like alien, I don't remember the guy's name now, but it was like the guy who said he worked at Area 51, and like I listened to that because I'm like, oh, that's interesting. But I don't know. I think ever since COVID, he's made it like a COVID podcast instead of anything else.
Aaron Rodgers. Okay, one last thing though, just have to say the Rodgers Instagram story from this weekend. I mean, it was just
the Novak Djokovic.
I swear to God.
And then he crossed out Moderna.
Him crossing out Moderna was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Novak Djokovic is also like COVID vaccine too, right?
He's like, stand with you, brother.
Yeah, and it's just,
well, that's why he's Novak.
Crossing out the Moderna was so absurd. I loved it.
And such a subtle Randall Cobb's just sitting there, probably like, I did hear that Novak wasn't allowed to play in the U.S. Open.
Well, in my spin zone was he crossed out Moderna because he's a company man and only was a fan of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Right.
That was a good. That was good.
The vaccine that was discontinued because it was by far worse than the other two. Like,
he's still standing strong with them, though. He's like you said, he's a company man.
That shows
loyalty, which means that he's going to play for the Jets for more than 1 year. That shows loyalty to me.
It's brand loyalty. He's helping. Yeah. He's
he didn't get the vaccine. Can't get Johnson & Johnson, I'm not getting anything.
No. He was inoculated.
Was he?
No, that's what he said, though.
He was immunized.
Oh, yeah, I was immunized. Yeah, immunized. It was the crystals.
By Shailene Woodley's water crystals. Yes. Yeah.
No, and the best part of it when that whole thing was happening was everyone was so focused on Rodgers that was when Joe Flacco basically showed up to the Jets facility with, like, fake COVID like vaccine cards.
Yeah, the fake vax card.
Yeah. He was just like, yeah, no, I got it. And then he was taking like press conferences like an hour later. But no one cares because it's Joe fucking Flacco. So
But yeah, the Aaron Rodgers alien story was great. He's obviously kind of a psycho, but we love him for who
he's
he
our
is.
Our psycho.
Yes.
Yeah. And so is Robert Saleh. There are our two psychos in very different ways. Basically, in like polar opposite ways, psychos.
Mm-hmm.
But then this was like a like tiny moment. But I like grasped onto this like one quote and was like, oh, this makes me love this guy so much more. Which it went to a couple guys, like we were saying, of like they had a couple days off of practice, I guess, and it was showing like here's what these guys do when they're not practicing, basically. And Garrett Wilson was going and getting like a bowl from somewhere and was like, the person was like, oh, do you want to come make it yourself? And he went back there and she was like, yeah, so you cut it like this. And he's like, oh, I don't touch knives. My hands are too important.
Yeah.
And I remember watching and just being like, yes, yes.
He was
because
so,
you see these stories all the time of guys in the NFL that it's like, oh, he's going to be out like 6 weeks with like a non football related injury, and you're like, what happened? And it was like, oh, he was cooking and he like cut his pinky off, so he's gonna be out for 3 weeks. And the fact that Garrett Wilson's like, I'm not touching a knife, like you're doing that for me.
That was amazing.
I like to imagine that when Garrett Wilson goes out for dinner, he has somebody with him that will cut his steaks for him.
One of his like,
I hope so.
Guys. Yeah.
If he never touches a knife for the rest of his football career, like I would be very happy. Like
not
he doesn't need to be.
Not even a cheese spreader, all right?
No. Right. Even if he's next to a charcuterie board, like somebody else is spreading, somebody else spread that brie on his cracker board. Nothing. So it was a tiny moment, but I was like, oh, like, I don't know if they even like got it when they were putting it in. It was just like a random moment, but it meant a lot to me. Then we saw Sauce at Buffalo Wild Wings with his Sauce, which he has like that partnership with Buffalo Wild Wings, signing stuff for fans, which was just like another moment where it's like Sauce seems like the nicest dude in the entire world. And it was also Sauce's birthday. And he came into practice and Michael Clemens gave him the most terrifying happy birthday I've ever seen. Like so menacing, like slowly.
Like,
he's like, He's like, Sauce, happy fucking birthday, bro.
I was like watching it from like, you know, through his TV screen. I was a little terrified. I was like,
yeah. is he gonna kill him because it's
also, also insane to me that Sauce is just as like tall as Clemens.
Oh yeah.
Like
yeah.
Obviously Clemens is a monster and like way thicker, but like it's just so crazy to me that Sauce can move the way he does at like 6'3", 6'4".
Right.
So then the last thing we got before we'll talk about the Sala speech last, but we finally got to see the boys go to Broadway. We've heard so much hype about Solomon Thomas, CJ Uzama, Rogers, among others, but they seem to be like the big three that are really loving Broadway, have been to like 100 different shows. We finally get to see all the boys. Zach Wilson went, Tanzel Smart, we said went, a bunch of the guys were there. Went to see the Michael Jackson musical. And one thing I picked up on, I don't know if I remember writing down who said it. No, I don't know who said it. Probably Solomon Thomas. But I remember him saying, like, he had already seen it before. He was like, oh, no, when they do this song, like, because somebody was asking, like, oh, do they do this song? And he was like, oh, yeah, it's really, like, a really good scene when they do this. So I was like, he's already seen this. Like, I don't think anybody in the world loves Broadway musicals more than Solomon Thomas.
Watching him stand there next to and do everything next to Tanzel Smart, who was like, yeah, asking them of everything, but he couldn't have been further away when like ever like mentally when everyone else is like, and he's just kind of like standing there vibing. But Solomon Thomas is next to him, like dancing, like he's doing his thing. And when you mentioned before about Garrett Wilson with the knives, when Solomon Thomas was trying to do the moonwalk, I was like, oh my god.
That's like, an Achilles.
This would be a Jets thing to have happened where he's trying to do the moonwalk and it's like Solomon Thomas blows out his Achilles trying to do the moonwalk at the Michael Jackson show. And I obviously we would have known if that had happened already, but still, like, some part of me was like, I don't know about this, man. Like,
we don't need to be moonwalking.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, we don't need to be moonwalking. You're part of the, you're a core part of this defensive unit here. We kind of need you, buddy. Like,
that guy though was pretty good. He like was. Sounded like MJ, and he moved very good too.
Yes. Also, I like that Black and White, very underrated Michael Jackson song.
Very.
It was a good choice.
Yes, great.
That there's like that famous commercial, right? Where like. They like turn their head and they like get morphed into like somebody else's.
Oh yeah, I think it's the music video.
Yeah, the music video.
Yeah, the music video for it. Yeah, and then what they say in practice the next day, Randall Cobb said Garrett Wilson was basically Michael Jackson.
He moves like
him. Yeah,
he moves like him. He's like, I love that. Like that.
Love
like,
that.
And they show, and then he did like the touchdown celebration. Like after Randall Cobb pointed it out, he did like the whole move.
Oh
Oh, great. I hope he does that in game. That would be so
That'd
cool.
Be sweet. If he took like the helmet off and was like,
he's gonna have a lot of opportunities.
Oh, it'd be unbelievable.
No, he can't take the helmet off though. That's right, we saw what happened last year with DJ Moore.
He just needs he needs to just grab like a sideline guy's, not the refs because you know how to touch them, but a sideline guy's hat and just do that.
Yeah,
something simple like that. He can make it happen.
Or moonwalk.
Yeah, or he could moonwalk. Although we're saying no moonwalk. We're putting in no moonwalk.
Yeah, no,
exactly.
no knives, no moonwalk.
Moonwalkings. Yeah. Nothing like
you
that.
You know what? No Michael Jackson dances. I don't need any ligaments damaged.
Exactly. Because
you're trying to moonwalk.
But then we got the Robert Sala speech. We've had a couple good ones. We had the Crows and the Eagles speech, which gets referenced actually in the Everest speech. He talks about the Crows one more time, which was like his first speech, which was awesome. This one was awesome. The NFL posted it, but they posted a version with like beeps over the F words, which makes it so much worse. Like it's like 50% as good when you don't get when you have to listen to the beeps. So go watch the real thing if you didn't watch the episode yet. But yeah, he talks about climbing Everest and how long it takes people to climb Everest and how long it takes just to get to base camp before you even start climbing actual Mount Everest, and saying this is where we are now, like all the work we've put in all summer, all that's done is gotten us to base camp, but now we got to climb the actual mountain. And it was awesome. I mean, he's like an unbelievable motivational speaker, and yeah, anybody who thinks he's like corny or like I mean, I know it's cut for a TV show, but like when the camera's going around, like the players are all 100% like locked in on what he's saying. Like it's not like they're not like looking around or like looking down or like on the phone. Like everybody's totally locked in. Like he's I think a very good speaker, very good motivational speaker. So it was an awesome final speech to kind of close 100%. Out the season.
I also appreciate, you know, him being educational. I did not know how long it took to get the base camp for Mount Everest.
Oh yeah.
And now I do. And I'm sure there are plenty of other people in the same boat. So not only is Robert Saleh motivational, he's educational as well. And that's something that I appreciate about a head coach. You know, I can appreciate that. He's a teacher as much as he is as a coach. You know,
I can see Rogers being the kind of guy that's going to try to climb Mount Everest when he retires too. So I'm sure he appreciates that. But I loved, my favorite thing about that speech was when he said the part about other coaches. He's like, you know, your team, you're not playing on a good team when the other team comes up and says, is like, what is like, you know,
you guys play hard.
You guys play hard. And he's fuck that. He's like, I want to like come up and just like whatever he said after that. But him just saying, fuck that. I was, I'm all in. And I actually paused it for a second. I was like, I want you to work out as the head coach of this team so badly because I'm so bought into you as a person. I just need to see it again on the field as a head coach. Because we've seen the missteps of him actually being a head coach on the field. Off the field, I'm totally bought in with this guy. So I just need to see it play out there. So I want both of them, him and Douglas working in tandem, but specifically Saleh, because of stuff like that, because of speeches like this, because of him interacting with players, like it's what I wanted to see. Maybe it's just because we were so held hostage by, you know, the Bowles and Gase years of just being like incredibly boring, that it's like have a guy like this.
Yeah,
it's just such a breath of fresh air that I found myself in the like the past like rooting for a particular head coach like on a personal level like I have with Robert Saleh.
It's similar to how I felt about Rex Ryan. I think they're both intense guys, mm-hmm. but it's different types of intensity. Whereas Rex is like a lot of bravado and bluster, and banging his chest, and while at the same time being able to back it up, you know, right away, right? Like he came in and the Jets started winning. Saleh, it's been a slow 2 years, and this is the year where it's supposed to like really work out. And like when it didn't work out with Rex, I definitely didn't feel the same way about him as I did when he first came in. And I definitely don't feel the same way I do about Robert Saleh as when he first came in. I think that, you know, they're two different situations but like also very similar. But with Robert, I think this would be the very first time that I've ever actually be heartbroken if it didn't work out for Jets head coach. Because like you said, Connor, I'm like emotionally invested in who this guy is as a person, just as much as he is a coach. You know, this is a guy who, you know, big family, really good personality, very intense, but like seems to really care about this area, the community, mm-hmm. And his players. The best players coach we've had since Rex, for sure. And I think that if it didn't work out, it would mean that not like there's also more at stake ever than there ever has been before with the Jets. So like if it didn't work out, not only do I care about this guy as a person, but I also care about this team at this point more than I've ever cared about it because of how like the expectations that we have and the potential opportunity that's there. If Robert Saleh doesn't work out, man, it would be heartbreaking for me. And I think it wouldn't just be me. It would be a lot of Jets fans. Cause I think a lot of Jets fans feel similarly where they think that he's just a great person, not just a great coach, but a great person as well.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. He, I think does have a lot of similarities to Rex, the defensive coordinator, just that kind of like intense defensive coordinator attitude, but just like he's able to focus it much better than Rex, mm-hmm. I think. Whereas like Rex is going to say the first thing that comes to his mind and he's going to be like, fuck you. Whereas Robert Saleh is more like, hey man, I'm keeping the receipts. Like he's able to just be much more like subtle with like he's confident, but in a much more subtle way. And sure. isn't just going to say that. Sure. Yeah, he isn't going to just say like the first thing that comes to his mind, which, I mean, like you said, for a while, Rex backed it up. So it was awesome. And then when he couldn't,
then it wasn't awesome
and
anymore.
It got annoying, right? And if it doesn't work out for Salah, it's not like he's been like talking a lot of shit. He's just been like, yeah, we're keeping receipts. And like last year, it worked out for the majority of the season, and no one really shat on him for the receipts comment because they started 6-2 or whatever it was. Yeah. You know?
Right.
And when things went wrong, it was so clearly like one person's fault, and he was not right. One person.
Right.
And hopefully this year it all works out. But like you said, this is the most, it's the most excited I've been about a team, a Jets team in my entire life, without a doubt. Like the year that we made the first AFC championship game, it came out of nowhere. And then the next year it was like, of course it was like, oh man, this team is obviously special. Like we could do it again, but it wasn't. You were almost playing like how playing with house money. It was like, we already went to an AFC championship game. It was like, let's go try to do it again. But it was like, that was such an awesome ride. And then we did do it again, obviously. And then the teams after that were disappointing, like the Ryan Fitzpatrick year, the one year that it seemed like that team could be special. Like I had high expectations, but nothing like what we have going into this year. And it's like we were talking about at the beginning. It's exciting. It's also scary.
Terrifying.
I had a friend from college who was in town for like a work thing, who got into town on Monday, on Labor Day. And we went out to a bar to watch the Duke Clemson game Monday night. And I was talking to, he's a Bears fan. So it's like completely like, has no investment in any of these people other than Aaron Rodgers being out of the NFC North. It's the only thing that he has in this situation. And I was talking to him about it, and I was basically telling him like, I'm trying to not like become too like emotionally invested. Like I already know it's too late, but like week one against the Bills, it's like, if we lose to the Bills, it's not like, oh no, maybe this team isn't good. It's like the Bills are a ridiculously talented football team. Like they're favorites to win the game, even though like we have all this hype, like the Bills are the favorites to win the game. So I'm just trying to take it like week by week and like go into this game. And it's like, yeah, of course I want to win this game. Like it would be unbelievable. Like the hype train would really start to go hard if we win this game. But if we lose this game, yeah. Like if we embarrass ourselves somehow, but I just don't see a world in which we like have an embarrassing performance. Like we definitely might not win the game.
You know what that is? That's our dumb Jets fan brains being dumb Jets fan brains. Like it, like this is what we're used to. We're waiting for the other shoe to drop. We haven't got it. We've never had what we have right now. So like,
yeah, like I don't know.
Like I've experienced football success, and it's only been college, and I wouldn't even call it like success. Like Penn State won a Big Ten title when I was a junior in college, and that's like the extent of it. But like, I remember vividly having the expectation that we're going to just go out and score 40 points every single week, and like no one can stop us. Like it was Saquon and Trace and just no one would be able to stop them. Except Sam Darnold, right. Oh, how irony likes to fuck with me. Yeah. And so like I've had that feeling before, but I've never had it for the Jets. And this feels very, very different from anything I've ever experienced with any of my professional sports teams. I guess the only thing I could compare it to would be from like the end of July to October of 2015 for the Mets, where I just expected them to score 7 runs a game because that's what they were doing. And like, they just were rolling through the playoffs. And like, when your teams are that good, like, you're like, all right, we're like, you go in expecting to win. And the players do this too. They go in with the expectation, like, we're going to win tonight. Like we're fucking Alabama. Like, obviously we're going to win, you know, like Nick Saban's our coach. Like no one's beating us. Right. Like you have that mentality. Jets fans don't have that mentality. Not yet. And maybe we don't even get to have that mentality. Like maybe it all falls to shit. Right. Maybe that's what happens. Odds are it's not going to fall to shit because Aaron Rodgers is just that good. And we'll develop, like, I'd say by like, if this works out, if all of our hopes and dreams come true, we start 4-1 or something, like by week 5 or 6, it's just going to be it's going to be the standard. You know, it's going to be right. The expectation. Mm-hmm. Like, we're going to go out and win this week. Like, we have Aaron Rodgers. Like, we're the Jets. This is who the Jets are now. But again, like, I'm still waiting for that other foot to drop. You know, I'm still waiting for Aaron to snap it, and like he just spontaneously combusts into flames, and we're like, all right, Zach, go out there and
try to win it.
All right. You know,
try to go out there, and it'll happen. Like, yeah. Try to go out there and beat Patrick Mahomes in prime time. Think you can do that for us, bud?
Yeah. Like, so, like, I'm, well, that's... I I'm still waiting for that shoe to drop, but hopefully, we develop that sense of confidence that we're expecting to have.
Yeah, which we've talked about that through all these recaps that we've done since the first one. Is it just the attitude of not just Aaron Rodgers, but players that we've seen there over the last couple of years have a completely different attitude than we've seen them have before in terms of just like confidence, where they're like, oh, that's our quarterback. The coaching staff, like we talked about the good number 33, not that number 33.
Yeah, I know, but this guy was a piece was a problem and was contributing to that.
Yeah, he was terrible. And now we have a great number 33.
Right.
But the guys just had like a, like we, one of the best moments of the season was the Jeff Ulbrich meeting where Aaron Rodgers threw the ridiculous touchdown. And Jeff Ulbrich's like, don't worry, guys, nobody else in the league is going to be able to do that to us. So like, we're good. Like that type of confidence is just something that, like you said, Jesse, it's like you get it as a fan, but I think the players get it before the fans get it. Like the For players sure. catch mm-hmm. on to like, oh, this is, because the players know more than anybody, like, in being in the room, like this is special or this isn't special.
Look,
and you know, they clearly know that it is.
We're losers. We've been our losers our whole lives.
Right.
Sauce, that jersey behind you, Sauce played in a national championship game. Like he's been a winner his whole life. Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. Aaron Rodgers has won 4 MVPs and has a Super Bowl ring. Yeah, Garrett Wilson was at Ohio State where they're just trouncing everybody. Like Quinton Williams won titles in Alabama. Mecole Hardman was at Clemson or whatever, or Auburn or wherever the hell he was, right? Like
Georgia.
Garrett
Wilson was with Ohio State. These guys are
winning programs. Yeah, they come from big time programs. They're winning in high school, they're winning in college. These guys aren't losers. They only become losers when they get on the Jets.
The
Jets have been bad. But us, we've been losers as fans. Hopefully that changes this year. And that confidence that I was talking about as we had as Mets fans in 2015 and we had I wouldn't even say we had this with Rex Ryan, because every game was a dogfight and we were like, I hope we rush for like 150 yards and Sanchez throws for 200 and doesn't turn it over.
And
like,
maybe
now
and
I'm
maybe
like, I hope Rodgers I hope Rodgers like, you know, balls out and we score 40 points. Like that's like the expectation, not what we had with Rex Ryan. So that's what I'm hopeful for. And, you know, Jets fans who have never experienced anything like this, if things go well, you'll start to expect that and it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, this has been really fun doing this. These last few episodes, it's gotten me even more amped up for this season than I thought possible. But all of a sudden we're a few days away and I'm almost happy that it's the Monday night game. I know that puts more pressure on it, but I can enjoy the first NFL Sunday of the year and just like take it in and be like, oh, this is great. The NFL's back. Like watch all the games, watch Red Zone and watch the Cowboys embarrass the Giants on Sunday Night Football. Because I'm now a Giants hater. Thanks to Ethan.
Thank you, Ethan. Who inexplicably
welcome
the Jets
to the club, guys.
Reason.
I've been the only Jets fan in my group of 10 friends for my whole life. So they're all Giants.
Yeah. So, and then Monday night, it'll be us and hopefully things go our way. But again, like I said, if you put out a good performance and lose to the Bills in the first game of the season is not over. It'll be okay. So regardless of what happens Monday night, as long as Aaron Rodgers is alive to play the next week, everything will be fine. So, fingers crossed,
Let me just put it so we don't get like monkey pawed here with as long as Rodgers is okay. Because that's something like, so as long as Rodgers is okay, then it'll be like, but Garrett Wilson tore his ACL or something.
Oh,
like
that. Yeah.
So
no.
Let's like, you know, put that out there as well. Just, we need.
I don't want anybody from either team to get hurt.
Yeah.
No injuries.
That's a good point. Because you want to know something, Jesse? They were posting Josh Allen's stats against the Jets in his career. They're not great. He doesn't play.
No, the Jets own him that
way. I was
there last year.
Yeah, he's got a winning record against amazing. The Jets, which isn't hard during the entire time he's played for the Bills, but he hasn't done great. I mean, you
he has like a 3-8 touchdown interception. Yeah, it's like, I mean, really bad.
You remember those interceptions he threw in that game? That first one when they had that amazing like kick return, or the Jets just fucked something up and they were in like the 20-yard line their first drive. He threw one right to picked out Jordan Whitehead.
And yeah, I was the other one in the end zone. He threw that. Yeah.
I mean, to be also fair, he was pretty bad his first 2-3 years in the league. And then he figured it out and became the Josh Allen we know today. But yeah, like, his numbers definitely aren't good against the Jets.
He lost to Zach Wilson last year.
He did do that.
And I've said it before. If Matt Milano didn't go in there and shatter 8 of Mike White's ribs or whatever, the Jets might have won that second game in Buffalo. So
I believe it.
I'm not terribly afraid of the Buffalo Bills.
But no, Jets fans.
I'm not afraid of anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Only the only guy who scares me in the whole league is Patrick Mahomes.
And Jalen Hurts. And the Eagles.
Eagles, the Jets have never beaten the Eagles. Yes, I am scared of them.
So, which is just like still a
0-12 or 13, whatever it is. Yeah. In the history of their franchises, never beaten them.
But yeah, Jets fans, I would say more than any fan base in the NFL, knows not to root for injuries on the other team, because sometimes you injure the other team's quarterback and then Tom Brady is born. So you never know what's going to happen. You don't. Yeah. You're like, oh, Bledsoe's out. This is great news.
That's a true monkey's paw thing. Like, great. Oh wow, the Patriots' starting quarterback is out. Like, well, maybe the Jets will have things will turn out, and thumb curls in, gave birth to the goat.
That's it. We got week one coming up. Thanks to everybody that's listened to these previews. It's been really fun for us to do, getting ready for the season. So I will be on the Blakey Locke Show on YouTube and wherever else you listen to podcasts. We'll be mostly doing more college football stuff. So if you're a college football fan, stay tuned in there. But these guys will be doing stuff for the Jets every week on the Jets stream. So make sure you're listening there. And I'll definitely be hopping on a couple times during the season. So
absolutely.
Awesome.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thanks for listening.